Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, every single time I come to this gospel passage, I immediately am reminded by an experience I had a good many years ago, over 20 years ago, on this very Sunday morning, fifth Sunday of Lent, when I had the first Mass at St. Ignatius Parish down in the South Side. Church doesn't exist anymore. It's been merged with neighboring churches. But I was there. It was a beautiful spring morning, I recall. It's over 20 years ago. And I recall of having first Mass. I recall when I walked in that there was a little grandma sitting in the front pew saying a rosary, black babushka on her head, just kind of ignoring everything else. She probably had been the first one in when the door opened at 5:30 or whatever. And then when we processed up the main aisle, there she was saying a rosary. When it came to the homily, I began by saying, you know, there's one thing that always bothers me about this gospel passage. Namely, if this was someone caught in adultery, where's the other person? And she, this little grandma, shouted out, "That's right," she said. All of a sudden, the whole church heard it. Everybody kind of smiled and thought a little bit. And then she went back to her rosary. But obviously, I wasn't the only one who had that question in my mind. My real point, then and now, is that all sin is personal. That it's the result of our own personal choice and decision. It's done, if it's really sin, it's deliberate and freely made, but in some way all sin is also social. And all sin is also communal. Every sin somehow, you know, it belongs to everybody. And we need to keep that in mind. So we may have decided to claim somebody else's property unjustly. We may have decided to do that ourselves, personally. Or we may decide to fudge the truth in some way to our own advantage, or violate someone's dignity physically or morally, sexually. We may withhold generosity from the poor, but every single decision we make that's labeled sinful has, in some degree, been shaped by others, or inspired by others, or has consequence for others. It makes the whole world in which we live somehow more toxic, and the atmosphere more dangerous. Every single sin has this social dimension. Everything, but also our virtues as well. And nothing we do is in isolation. Now notice what Jesus didn't do in the gospel. That also strikes me every time I come to this passage. He didn't interrogate her to get all the circumstances. He didn't make an effort to figure out what caused it, at this moment at least. He didn't spend any time looking for excuses. He didn't work over the past. He just said two things. He created a moment to acknowledge sin, personal sin, not just for her, but for everybody in that circumstance, created a moment to acknowledge privately, socially, one's own sin. And Father George Smiga, a wonderful biblicist down in Cincinnati, wrote a piece on this gospel passage. And he said, I don't think he was writing people's sins in the ground. I mean, that's been the explanation of what he was doing, scratching in the ground. He said maybe he was just doodling in the dust, making space for people to think. And in that terrible, ominous silence, everybody coming to conclusions that led them to say, well, no, I probably shouldn't be here. At any rate, he just gave people a chance to think. And then he'd offered an opportunity for a fresh start and a new beginning. Not just this individual, but the whole situation. Lent is that for the whole world. It's time to recognize the mistakes we make as community and then to look for a fresh start. So allow me to go to an old theme of mine that's part of spirituality, Christian Catholic spirituality, a conviction. Namely, that every single one of us at some point in life gets broken. I feel that very, very strongly. Every one of us at some point may be broken by our own sins and mistakes, may be broken by the circumstances over which we have absolutely no control, may be broken by thoughtless selfishness of others, or by circumstances which leave us, like this woman in the gospel, with no options, no future, nowhere to go, no place to hide. And then, like the rock bottom that's essential for recovery from alcoholism, the choice of a fresh start. Is no one condemning you? He asked. Not only of her, really, but of every single person in that crowd who silently slipped away. Is no one here condemning you? Neither will I. Jesus opens graves, we're told, even the ones we dig for ourselves. So we come to God during Lent as individuals, but also as an entire church, with all our weaknesses, seeing through all the pretenses we use to cover our own sins and mistakes and weaknesses. Those who borrow money with an idea of finally making it good on the slot machines and paying it all back. Those who exaggerate our unhappiness to explain our infidelity to promises. Salvation always starts where we are. That's the great grace of incarnation. Wherever we are, God's there first. With all the weakness and everything that's part of who we are, God is there. And then God creates something wonderful. That's grace of redemption. So to each of us, once again, Jesus asks, is there no one to condemn you? And he looks around. There is no one. Then neither will I. That's the liberating, transforming grace of Lent. Not just to us as individuals, but once again to the whole church. Neither will I. Because you've acknowledged the situation. Now we can work together.